thinking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my Son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. The Gospel of the Lord. This past week, with all of the snow that we have had, and you've probably seen the piles outside here at Trinity, I was beginning to wonder if instead of preaching this sermon, I should lead us out onto the mountain of snow in front of the parish building, and maybe we would get lucky and we would meet God. As the pile began to melt this week, the title of my sermon began to be revealed behind the snow pile. With all of this snow, it has certainly gotten in our way in our travels and many of the aspects of our lives. One of the ways that it has impacted my family is that it has affected and kind of stopped something I've been doing with my older daughter, Catherine, the last several weeks. I didn't tell you you were in the sermon, sorry. I've been going out with Catherine for driving lessons. Yeah, I know. She's doing really well, I have to say. She is doing really well. But when we're out for these driving lessons in the church parking lot or the school parking lot, which is kind of as far as we've gotten so far, the three words that keep coming up in our conversations when I'm talking to her about driving are stop, look, and listen. These are good words for us to consider when we're driving. I think they are also good words for us to consider in all of our journeys and the intersections that we face in our lives. And while it might be true that my driving lesson experiences with my daughter have impacted my view of the gospel for this day, I do believe that stop, look, and listen are important words for us to consider as we ponder the story of the Transfiguration. After the hectic pace of preaching and teaching and feeding thousands and healing so many people, Jesus asks some of his closest companions to take time away, to come away with him for prayer, to leave behind what they are doing, to stop their work, even though it's important, to take time away. And they get really away, because climbing the mountain was not a quick trip. It was a process of moving farther and farther away from the daily grind, farther away from all of the distractions that might get in the way, to move to a different place. Now, the disciples get to this place, and they, like us, have an idea about perhaps what would be the best use of their time. And though they want to pray, they fall asleep. But Jesus, we're told, is praying. In the Gospel of Luke, more than any other gospel, prayer has a main role in Jesus' life and ministry. Before, during, and after major events throughout the gospel, Jesus is seen praying. Not just routine prayers, but deep prayer. When Jesus is baptized, it is while he is praying that the Holy Spirit descends into him. In the midst of all of his teaching and his healing and the miracles that he performs, he repeatedly takes time away for prayer before selecting the 12 who will be his key leaders, the disciples, he prays. When he comes down off of the mountain at the end of our story to turn his face toward Jerusalem and the cross, we have to believe that he is sustained in the prayer that he has been praying throughout. But today in our story, here on the mountain, it is while Jesus is praying that we see this glimpse of glory, this revelation of God in Jesus. And we're here on the mountain with the disciples who have been sleepy, and yet what happens in front of them compels Peter and John and James and compels us to look at what is taking place. Until now, there's been a gradual unfolding from the time of Jesus' birth into humanity, this gradual unfolding of the fulfillment of prophecy. And right before this story that we hear today, Jesus has asked the disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Peter blurts out the truth that he cannot comprehend, that Jesus is the Christ of God, that Jesus is divine and is the one who will deliver. Now here on the mountain, we catch this vision, this revelation of that truth. In a moment of overwhelming glory, radiance, brilliant radiance emanating from within Jesus as he stands before the disciples. And the forces of nature collaborating. It must have exceeded comprehension. I can't even begin to imagine what it would have been really like to be there on the mountain. And when this is all taking place, the disciples see this one that they know as Jesus, but they see that he is not just the Jesus they have known. Until now, they've seen him as a teacher, as one who has the answers. They've seen him as a leader, as someone who can control things. And they've seen him as a friend. But in all of these ways that they picture Jesus, they are using a perception that says that while he might be better at doing all of those things than they are, that perhaps with enough effort, they might be his equal. And yet now, here on the mountain, in this revelation of something cosmic, of God's appearance in Jesus, this moment of divinity, the disciples who are there on the mountain with him begin to grasp that there is an inequality that they can never hope to bridge. That there is something more taking place here. And they respond, perhaps like we do, when we're confronted by something that exceeds our ability to take it in. They try to manage it. They try to quantify it. And yet revelation and prophecy are dancing before them. And now what? What does it all mean? What should we do? We have to do something. And then the cloud rolls in, and we hear the voice of God booming, "Listen, listen." What happens on the mountain demonstrates God's power and might, demonstrates God entering into humanity. But what happens on the mountain also demonstrates humanity experiencing the presence of God and communion with God, and of a God who does not look to have a monologue, but a conversation. And a God who reminds us how real conversation works. Which leads me back to prayer. Philip Yancey is an author who has written a lot about prayer, and he says that prayer stands as the place where God and human beings meet. And he says that in theory, it is an essential human act and a priceless point of contact between humans and the God of the universe. In theory, prayer is essential, and prayer is priceless to us. And in theory, we are all good at conversation. In reality, however, many factors get in the way. For starters, we tend to be skeptics. In days of old, people would look to the heavens when they were seeking rain and the end of a drought, or when they were seeking the end of a storm. These last couple weeks, we know a little bit about that place. But now, instead of looking to the heavens, we look to monitor low pressure fronts. We get our weather in 15-minute intervals, which is still a little shocking to me that you can do that. And we race to talk to our friends on Facebook, by email, on our cell phones. And we curse the science when it fails us. And we're strapped for time. In our age today, conversations are getting shorter and more cryptic all the time, with email and texting and instant messaging and camera phones and all of the other technologies that allow us to communicate shorter and faster. And in the middle of that, we are having less and less actual conversation, much less any kind of conversation at all. And our schedules are so full of all of the things that we need to fit in, all of the things that have to find a place in our lives. Where does God fit in when we are already so far behind? And we engage perhaps sometimes in drop and run prayer to God rather than experiencing God in prayer. And there is a difference, because prayer is intended to be about a relationship, our relationship with God. Like all relationships, it has its ups and downs, and it's a learning process. We all know that when we think about the relationships in our lives. There are times of great excitement and times of the mundane and the ordinary, times of great joy and great irritation, times where we are keenly focused, and times where we are constantly distracted. Like all relationships that matter, prayer takes work. Prayer is the key to the most important relationship we have, our relationship with God. Which leads, I think, to a greater factor in our lives that gets in our way. We need to take time away from skepticism and feeling overwhelmed. But more importantly, we need to take time away from our perception of the universe. The truth is that we often believe that our prosperity and our talent, our resources, our ability to command things, is our primary source of well-being and security. And we can proclaim that we have found the center of the universe, and it is us. I think this is what's behind a lot of the self-help books that we find when we go to the bookstore, including some of those on faith and religion. A few years back, a famous book was written by Pastor Rick Warren. Perhaps you've heard of it. 40 Days to a Purpose-Driven Life. I believe that Pastor Warren had a very good intention in mind, which was to encourage people to draw them into a relationship with God. Unfortunately, in reality, what many people tended to focus upon was upon their purpose. We all have to have a purpose. I need to find my purpose. I need a purpose. And when I find my purpose, it will equal success for me then I can do good things for you who haven't found your purpose, and I can feel good about what I am doing for you, and I will feel good about my purpose. Where is God in that equation? And what if I can't find my purpose? And what if I can't make it happen? Then what? The author Mark Ellingson has written a book recently entitled Sin Bravely. I like that title. His book suggests that the unintended consequence of Rick Warren's work is that even in trying to reorient ourselves, we focus on our skill and talent. We focus on this, and this is what we look for. And the voice we listen to sometimes is our voice saying, we can do it without God most of the time. And we never stop. And I suggest that this is the place that's the heart of sin. And this is where we find ourselves standing right there with Peter on the mountain, figuring out all of the things that we can do. And the cloud rolls in. And the voice of God thunders, this is my son. Listen to him. Stop doing, stop asking, stop talking. Listen first to him. Some of you have shared that during the recent storm, you found you had more time for listening to God when we couldn't go anywhere because all of the roads were closed. As you looked at the storm and you listened to the howling of the wind, you stopped. You listened. As we again prepare this week to enter the season of Lent, I suggest that God's words to us in today's gospel are stop, look, and listen. I'd like to encourage you to contemplate what a healthier conversation and relationship with God would look like. How can we grow in that discipline? I'd like to suggest that the approach to prayer that Mother Teresa lifted up mirrors what we hear in our gospel for this day. There are four parts. We talk. God listens. God talks. We listen. I think most of us are pretty good at the first half of dropping off our things before God that we want to share. But I would encourage that we not short-circuit the relationship by skipping the last of those parts. We continue to listen to God. Because when we live into this rhythm, this kind of prayer relationship stops our focusing on our doing and turns our focus to being, to God's being and our being. And there's discipline involved. But when we follow this discipline, when we follow this process more deeply, we are the ones transformed. We change from being people who only hear where we can decide to keep or discard what others share to being people who listen. Because when we listen, we take something in and it changes us. And we can stop being people who only see what's going on around us and move on. Begin to become people who look at what is going on in the world around us and begin to see it differently. And in our time in prayer and reflection in this way, our being is shaped and reshaped by God each time we are together. And then perhaps instead of just praying for hurts, we will see others who have wronged us and contemplate forgiveness, including asking for forgiveness for our inability to forgive. Instead of praying for our wants, we will begin to listen to the cries of those with the most basic of needs. instead of demanding immediate answers and whining about time. We will see when we stop that there is a gift in each day and in God's possibilities. So I encourage you to perhaps consider the 40 days of Lent for a God purpose. Consider taking up one of the many opportunities for walking with God's Word and times of prayer that will be offered here in Trinity throughout the Lenten season. Consider how your relationship with God might be deepened by engaging in one of these disciplines, not as another thing to do, but as a door to a deeper revelation. A revelation that includes seeing that the words disciple and discipline have something in common, that we need to be taught. We need to be taught to live and have our being in communion with something greater than our limited vision. Instead, to be in communion with God's greater truth. And this truth reveals to us a glory more magnificent than we can imagine. But it also reveals to us the cross and a depth too great for us to fathom. And we should contemplate this. Then we too, like the disciples, will be speechless. And in our speechlessness, in the stillness, we can stand in awe that the God of the universe seeks us. Seeks us in love and in faithfulness. And we can face the truth that we need God. But our God meets our frailties and our faults with patience and with grace. There in the glimpse of that moment, we realize that there is nothing that we can say or do that is greater. That we do not have all the answers. That we need to keep listening. To be shaped by God before we act. And then follow. And there in the silence, we find ourselves waking up to God.